Thanks, Blessing Zulu. Good evening, Zimbabwe. It's 17 hours 20 UTC, 7:20 p.m. in Zimbabwe on Saturday, November 28th, 2015. You are listening to Studio 7 live from the Voice of America in Washington. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Gibbs Dube. Here are our top stories this evening. Political commentators believe that President Robert Mugabe is being forced to continue ruling even if Zimbabwe is facing serious social, economic and political problems.
He's a life president. De facto life president. They see it as a solution to the succession problem. Exactly what Grace said last week is what goes. And you saw the 9 provinces or 10 provinces all endorsing him ahead of the conference.
Some observers say Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa's proposal in his 2016 national budget for Zimbabwe's commercial banks to identify and fund champion farmers is totally unworkable.
The money that these guys will be, the farmers will be paying, that is the customer's fund. They will definitely need to have security for it. Without that, they will not go. You really have to pay. If you fail to pay, you will definitely have to sell the property.
And Zifa presidential candidate Trevor Kalejul says if elected, he will work with former players to improve the standard of soccer in Zimbabwe. Political commentators believe that President Robert Mugabe is being forced to continue ruling even if Zimbabwe is facing serious social, economic and political problems. They claim that some top ZANU-PF officials are doing this in order to protect their interests, while others fear Mr. Mugabe, who has ruled Zimbabwe for more than 35 years. One of the critics, Dr. Ipo Mandaza of Sapiens Trust, tells Studio 7, Mr. Mugabe has become Zimbabwe's de facto life president.
He's a life president. De facto life president.
Are you saying that there are some people who strongly believe in that?
Yeah, they see it as a solution to the succession problem.
Okay, so tell us a bit about it.
Exactly. What Grace said last week is what goes. And you saw the 9 provinces or 10 provinces all endorsing him ahead of the conference, and thereby preempting any discussion on succession, even though there would not have been any discussion on succession. Succession talk is taboo in ZANU-PF.
There are some people who believe that in ZANU-PF there is no one, absolutely no one, who can challenge Mr. Mugabe. Can that be true?
Yes. Yeah, of course. And all those in ZANU-PF agree that is the position. And if they have any ambition, they keep it strictly to themselves.
And so here, are you saying that President Mugabe is already a life president? I mean, he's a president for life.
De facto, yeah, he is. So basically, for people like Grace, but even those for whom Mugabe's departure would be a disaster, I think, no, let him stay on. Narin.
So now, looking at the first lady, I mean, let's call her Mrs. Mugabe. So at the end of the day, does she have those kind of presidential ambitions? People are just talking about it.
No, she doesn't have presidential ambitions, because she doesn't have to be to have such ambitions. She's already one.
What do you mean?
If Mugabe is a king, she's a queen. Yeah.
So, or maybe...
And as my guys have said in his column, she's doing exactly what Mugabe would have done normally. Run around the country, distributing tractors and so on. She's doing everything. What he can't do physically as the head of state, right, she'll do on his behalf.
Does that mean that she's actually running the country?
Symbolically, yes. And that the vice presidents end up where they are, no more than where they are. Merely deputies to carry out administrative functions such as acting and so on and so forth, but without any presidential ambitions. They've been warned sufficiently against such ambitions. So none of them would dare.
And then back to the issue of Mr. Mugabe being life president. So there's no way that he can be removed.
We'll see the next election.
But is it possible to do that?
Yeah. I think that basically it's going to be difficult to forestall the next election. And I think it will be equally difficult for them to repeat what they've done in the last 2-3 elections, i.e. to rig elections. And certainly if he's alive, he'll be the sole candidate. And he'll lose, of course.
That was Dr. Ipo Mandaza of Sapiens Trust speaking with Studio 7 from Harare. But Joseph Chuma, a ZANU-PF lawmaker and Central Committee member, says Mr. Mugabe is not a life president.
The presidency is all about 5-year term. And those targets are determined by the party that will be ruling at that particular moment. And so to say that he's the right president, I think is a bit of an ill turn. He's our president, currently elected in the 2013 Congress, to lead us up until the 2018 Congress. And if we are so happy with him, we're going to re-elect him again, because he's been a good captain, he's been a good driver, he's been a good leader, and we enjoy his leadership. I personally will be very glad to have him elected again, become our candidate again for the 2018 presidential election.
There are some people who are claiming that in ZANU-PF, there are some individuals who are always saying the president should continue. And yet everything is going wrong because there are no people who can challenge him. Is that true?
In ZANU-PF, it's not about individuals saying something. In ZANU-PF, it's about a collective people, because we actually vote as a collective people. We actually endorse him as a collective people. We don't put it as individuals. So if anyone saying it's individuals, that is very wrong. It's totally wrong. It is the ZANU-PF community, it is the party at large that decides on that, not an individual.
So definitely, Honorable Chuma, it seems as if the president is your next candidate in the presidential election in 2018. And people are saying, no, this is not...
We haven't even finished his term, the 2013 to 2018 term. Let's talk about this term first. And then when we finish that term, we can talk about the next term. It seems all that.
That was Honorable Joseph Chuma, a ZANU-PF Central Committee member, speaking with Studio 7 from Bulawayo. Some observers say Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa's proposal in his 2016 national budget for Zimbabwe's commercial banks to identify and fund champion firms is unworkable. In his budget presentation on Thursday, Chinamasa said the central bank has already pronounced its readiness to facilitate credit lines under which banks will identify committed and productive farmers. But banker Samson Kizio tells Studio 7 such financial schemes are problematic.
The money that these guys will be, the farmers will be borrowing, that is the customer's funds. They will definitely need to have security for it. Without that, they will not borrow.
So what type of security are banks normally looking for here in such cases?
We definitely look for, you know, title deeds, mortgage bonds, title deeds. That would definitely help, because there's no one who would borrow without that backing behind.
And we've seen that some farmers in the past have been failing to pay these loans. And what may actually make them to pay this time around?
The ministry would have a mechanism on how to recover those funds. Because if you're borrowing from the commercial side, you really have to pay. If you fail to pay, you definitely have to sell the property and recover all the funds through the sale of the property that they have been using for this. If you get in the project, you have to believe and trust that it will give you the funding. If it doesn't pay for it, then you have challenges.
That was Zimbabwean banker Samson Kizio speaking with Studio 7 from Harare. Development worker Everson Ndlovu agrees, noting that Mr. Chinamasa should go back to the drawing board.
We know farmers that can produce, and giving that function over to the banks, I really don't think is quite sound. After giving additional work to the bank, which is not their core business, banks simply fund on the basis of a strong proposal, on the basis of what whoever is asking for funds has in terms of what we call in collateral security. But for banks to begin to identify those farmers, I think we are not going anywhere. I don't think we are serious about this.
Now, we know that some farmers have had some loans over the years, but they're not repaying these loans. So how does it work this time around if they're going this way?
Exactly. That's the question. Government structures have failed to get back monies from farmers. I'm not sure whether they failed or they simply ignored it. Over the years, since independence, there's always a loan facility saying this is seed, this is whatever, use and pay back. And we know it has failed over years. Why then don't we then sit down and come up with a workable solution to that?
So what's the way forward, Mr. Liu?
To go back to the drawing board, to say through farmers organization, be it commercial, be it Zimbabwe Farmers Union, give us your productive farmers, full stop. These farmers are known. Then through them, you say, farmers, how can we assist you? And they know how. They know what they need from banks. They already know it is there. Our challenge is most of these farmers, some of them don't even have title deeds, unfortunately. And for banks to begin to finance farmers without title deeds to their land, that on its own is a challenge.
That was development worker Everson Ndlovu speaking with Studio 7 from Harare. civic group, the Women Development Association in Zimbabwe, says it is organizing a peaceful march with other human rights organizations to commemorate the ongoing 16 days of activism against gender-based violence. The group spokesperson, Sicasisile Ndlovu, tells Studio 7's Standekile Mhlanga, her organization works beyond the United Nations' designated 16 days of activism.
To hold a march in protest of the domestic violence that is going on and maybe in the ongoing violations of women's rights. We are going to hold this march maybe between next week or this week. We have tried to hold workshops with together with men and women, and we're trying to conscientize men to understand the weakness that women have, so that maybe they can actually adopt dialogue as a means of solving problems rather than maybe resorting to physical fighting, which at the end of the day affect women psychologically and maybe emotionally.
What areas in the country have you covered so far, and what exactly is your message?
For now, we are covering much south. We have been focusing on our fourth district, which is Zingwane, Gwanda, Plumtree, and Infiza. The message that we are packaging as an organization is mainly on women's rights advocates, whereby we feel if most of the people know about these women's rights, maybe they will develop an understanding and maybe try to protect and defend the women's rights public discourse.
How is the response in these communities, seeing that most people are more preoccupied with immediate gains, such as providing food for their families?
Okay, the response is not yet pleasing.
That was Sicasisile Ndlovu, spokesperson of the Women Development Association in Zimbabwe, on the line with reporter Standekile Mhlanga from Gwanda. And as usual, it's now time for the Women's Forum.
Welcome to the Women's Forum, a forum where we look at issues affecting women. I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye. Tonight on the Women's Forum, we are gladly joined by Mrs. Lois Chingandu, a board member of the International Conference on AIDS and STIs in Africa, ICASA. Zimbabwe will be hosting the ICASA starting tomorrow and ending on December 4, where HIV experts and those living with HIV are expected to converge from all over the world in Harare at the International Conference Center. Welcome to the Women's Forum, Mrs. Chingandu.
Thank you.
Tell us about ICASA.
This meeting is an HIV-AIDS international meeting that we hold every 2 years to examine our own progress towards the fight against HIV.
What kind of programs are you going to be having at this meeting that will benefit women, especially those living with HIV-AIDS?
We have some programs from a scientific point that are looking at new information regarding HIV treatment. So for women or people that are living with HIV, it's very important that they listen to some of the information that is coming out of the researches, because the researches tell us when to change the way we have been doing things. We also have programs that are around dialogue on critical issues. For example, we have dialogues that are looking at violence against women. We have dialogues looking at women and children and PMTCT. We have dialogues that are looking specifically at children's issues. So there's a lot of things for everybody. We also have a number of booths here, almost 100 booths of different stakeholders that provide information and services on HIV. So if one comes to the conference, you can walk through the booth. There will be lots of information on different topics. Or one can go to the community village to meet other people living with HIV, as well as the other events that will also be happening in the village. There are also women living with HIV that have been given spaces to sell the products that they produce.
If there are some women listening out there who would actually like to attend the conference, where exactly is it being held, and where would the community village be located, or where can they find it?
The conference is at the Rainbow Towers at the HICC. When they enter the hotel entrance, they will immediately see some signposts directing them to the community village. I really encourage women out there to come to the community village, because they don't have to pay money. It's a free space.
And also, if you can just give us an update on the preparations so far. How prepared is Zimbabwe?
We are now on 98% prepared. I can almost say everything that we planned is here. It's happening. It's set up. I wish you could see it. It's beautiful.
So for some women who might not be able to actually attend the conference, what do you have lined up for them?
We will be talking frequently on radio and TV, giving summaries of what is taking place at the conference. We will also be producing a daily news bulletin that is also sharing what is coming out of the conference. So there are all those opportunities for people to know what's going on.
Your last word, Mrs. Chingandu, just to strengthen some women out there that may be living with HIV/AIDS.
The words of encouragement that I want to give anyone who is living with HIV, including women, is that HIV is now a chronic disease, just like high blood pressure, just like diabetes, because we now have treatment for HIV. And the treatment needs to be taken every day for the rest of your life, but it really works.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Chingandu.
Thank you.
I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye in Washington.
Thanks very much, Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye. Hope you are going to have a wonderful weekend. And now an editorial reflecting the views of the U.S. government.
The first Thursday in November is a national day of Thanksgiving in the United States. The tradition is a very old one, dating to the arrival of the first English settlers in North America in the 17th century, who, after their first successful harvest, paused to celebrate their bounty and give thanks for surviving their first terrible winter in what was then a wilderness. Falling in the autumn, Thanksgiving has much in common with harvest holidays in other nations and cultures, such as Vietnam's Chung Tu celebration and Hamoo, the annual Yam Festival in Ghana. Still, with its turkey dinners, family gatherings, football games, and parades, there's something about the day that is distinctively American. Together with July 4th, when the United States marks its independence from Great Britain, it's a truly national holiday that includes all citizens in a common purpose, regardless of religious, political, or ethnic persuasion. It is also a time for people to look back at the year, take stock, and think about the future. With our nation dealing with crises in Eastern Europe, the Middle East, and West Africa, the looming uncertainties likely will be on many minds today. President Abraham Lincoln proclaimed the first official Thanksgiving amid similar serious circumstances, the American Civil War. But like their colonial ancestors, Americans are essentially an optimistic people. Surrounded by friends and family, today as in the past, they will enter into the spirit of the day, giving thanks for life's blessings and the promise of the future, living in a free land.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the U.S. government. And finally, in sports news, Zimbabwe presidential candidate Trevor Kalai-Jule says, if elected, he will work with former players and former football administrators to improve the standard of soccer in Zimbabwe.
One of the things I want to get on to immediately is a program for our ladies, our women, who have qualified for the Olympics. These are wonderful girls, and we want to support them as much as possible. I'm going to make sure that they have the right coaching programs. I want to look at the situation where they're in camp for a number of months preparing for the Olympics so that we create excitement. I want to look at the under-23 World Cup and the possibilities of that. I want to look at Africa and what we can do in that. I want to look at securing as many of our players into the top flight leagues around the world playing in Europe. You know, I'd like to see 20-plus players playing in that league. We also have a number of Zimbabweans, whether they were born in Zimbabwe or born of Zimbabwean parents, who are playing in Europe. Corley Bonet is playing for Colchester. He just scored 4 goals. There's Galloway playing for Everton. These are the type of people that we want to bring into football. And all of this can be done in the first 100 days. It will create excitement. It will create interest. Sponsors will start to come back. Investors can put money into football.
Do you have any plans for old players? Or let me say,
absolutely,
retired players?
We're working on the foundation. Before the late Madutam Pofu died, we were putting a plan together to revitalize Ngwenja Club the Manyala Hall near White City Stadium. Gibson Homela had come in to work with us as well. These are old players. Because I bumped into some more old players while I was in Bulawayo this weekend. Johannes Tuma, who was my goalkeeper at Eagles and then went to Highlanders. These are people who are all struggling, no jobs. July Sharara phoned me the other day. Chico Antonio, these great old players. And we forget about it. There's no Hall of Fame in Zimbabwe. We need a Hall of Fame.
That was Zifa presidential candidate Trevor Kale-Jul speaking with Studio 7 from Johannesburg, South Africa. And now to recap today's top stories. Political commentators believe that President Robert Mugabe is being forced to continue ruling even if Zimbabwe is facing serious social, economic and political problems. And some observers say Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa's proposal for Zimbabwe's commercial banks to identify and fund champion farmers is unworkable. That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Chris Kande. This is Kip Stube in Washington, D.C., wishing you a pleasant evening and a very, very good night.